नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 9, The Supreme Character of Jadabra. Text number 3. Tatrapi Svajana Sangatcha Visham Udvi Jamanu Bhagavata Karma Banda Vidvamsana Sravana Smarana Guna Vivarana Charanaravinda Yugalam Manasa Vidadad Atmana Pratigatam Ashan Kamano Bhagavad Anugrahena Nusmita Swapurva Janmavali Atmanam Unmata Jadanda Baddira Svarupena Darshayam Asalokasya. Please repeat. Tatra Api. In that Brahman birth. Svajana Sangat. From association with relatives and friends. Cha. And Vrisham. Greatly. Udvijamana. Being always afraid that he would fall down. Again, Bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Karma Bandha, the bondage of the reactions of fruitive activities. Vidvamsana, which vanquishes. Shravana, hearing. Smarana, remembering. Guna Vivarana, hearing descriptions of the qualities of the Lord. Charana Aravinda, lotus feet. Yugalam, the two lotus feet. Manasa, with the mind. Vidadat, always thinking of. Atmana, of his soul. Pratigatam, obstruction on the path of devotional service. Ashankamana, always fearing. Bhagavata Nugrahena, by the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anusmrita, remembered. Svapurva, his own previous. Janmavali, string of births. Atmanam, himself. Unmata, mad. Jada, dull. Andha, blind. Badira, and deaf. Sarupena, with these features. Darsayamasa, he exhibited. Lokasya, to people in general. Translation and purport. Due to his being especially gifted with the Lord's mercy, Bharat Maharaj could remember the incidents of his past life. Although he received the body of a Brahmin, he was still very much afraid of his relatives and friends who were not devotees. He was always very cautious of such association because he feared that he would again fall down. Consequently, he manifested himself before the public eye as a madman, dull, blind, and deaf, so that others would not try to talk to him. In this way, he saved himself from bad association. Within, he was always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord and chanting the Lord's glories, which save one from the bondage of fruitive action. In this way, he saved himself from the onslaught of non-devotee associates. Every living entity is bound by different activities due to association with the modes of nature, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Karanam guna sangasya sadasada yoni janmasu. This body is due to association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. We get different types of bodies among 8,400,000 species according to our karma. Karmanan daivanetrena. We work under different the influence of material nature contaminated by the three modes. And thus we get a certain type of body according to superior order, daivanatrena. This is called karma bandha. To get out of this karma bandha, we must engage in devotional service. Then we will not be affected by the modes of material nature. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14. Verse 26. Mancha yo vyabacharane bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitam brahmabhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, one who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. To remain immune from the material qualities, one must engage himself in devotional service, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. That is the perfection of life. when Maharaj Bharat took birth as a Brahmin, he was not very interested in the duties of a Brahmin, but within he remained. Within he remained a pure Vaishnava, always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. As advised in the Bhagavad Gita, Man mana baba mad bhakta mad yaji mam namas guru. This is the only process by which one can be saved from the danger of repeated birth and death. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Staya Bhutale Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namane Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharine Nivisesa Sunyavari Pastita Deshtarine. Due to his being especially gifted with the Lord's mercy, Bharat Maharaj could remember the incidents of his past life. Although he received the body of a Brahmin, he was still very much afraid of his relatives and friends who were not devotees. He was always very cautious of such association because he feared that he would again fall down. Consequently, he manifested himself before the public eye as a madman, dull, blind, and deaf, so that others would not try to talk to him. In this way, he saved himself from bad association. Within, he was always thinking of the two lotus feet of the Lord and chanting the Lord's glories, which save one from the bunch of fruitive action. In this way, he saved himself from the onslaught of non-devotee associates. And yesterday, Parthasarathi reminded us to take the opportunity to go forward at every moment. And in the notes that I was taking in the class, I wrote that down. Here it's the same idea. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one who does not fall down in any circumstance. So we're being trained, devotional service kind of training, like an Olympic athlete is trained to do something very special, maybe win a gold medal. Of course, there's losses, sometimes there's setbacks. One doesn't always win, but here Krishna indicates this high, high standard, one who does not fall down in any circumstance, who goes forward at every moment. He transcends the material nature and comes to the level of Brahman. The word here for not falling down in any circumstance is avibhyacharane. And once Srila Prabhupada was joking with one of his disciples and saying that you're not this avibhyacharane, you're vyabhicharane, you're falling down in every moment. Trying to encourage the disciple to do better, he was chastising him. You're not going forward at every moment, So, such a high standard of devotional service, exemplified by Srila Prabhupada and Jad Bharat, we were so fortunate, as Mataji Jai Badu, were you saying the other day? That Partha yesterday, he was saying the books are, Prabhupada's giving him his heart to us in the books. So we should take advantage. We need knowledge to come to a standard of not falling down, we need to be knowledgeable. We'll explore this today. I found a good conversation in which Srila Prabhupada has some exchanges with his disciples. He asks them, he's testing them about this, and in relation to the verse, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. We'll go through that. But Jad Bharat, he was exemplifying this. Srila Prabhupada was exemplifying this high standard. Jad Bharat was doing it in a way that was motivated by fear, you know. Remember scary movies? Remember horror movies? You know, you go to the movie and you really expect to be scared. You know, there's going to be some horrible creature, some monster in the movie. I mean, I'm just trying to give you the idea of fear in that sense. So Jad Bharat was feeling a fear in the presence of his relatives. He thought, this is very much frightening. It's horrible. I'm very much afraid. I'm very much afraid. And he characterized himself in the public eye as mad or dull. His name, Jada, means dead wood. You know, there's live wood which grows on a tree, and then you cut the limbs, cut the tree down, you have dead wood, and dead wood, you know, just sits there, dull. It doesn't manifest symptoms of life. So Jad Bharat was acting as though he was blind and deaf. Imagine that. Close your eyes for a minute and think about being blind. You know, you have to feel your way around. So he was acting as if he was blind and deaf. People would talk to him and he'd pretend he didn't hear. Actually, he was very much engaged in the transcendental platform. But to the people, he probably appeared like, you know, the monster that they should be scared of, because he was not like a coherent person. You know, if someone like this lives in the house, you might become afraid. Oh, he's, and you shun this kind of person. And that's what Jad Bharat wanted. He was afraid of the association, even of his Brahminical relatives. They were in a Brahmin's family, but still he didn't care. You know how relatives are. There's a British word I learned yesterday, an old British word, maundering. Do you recognize it? Maundering, M-A-U-N-D-E-R, maunder. Maunder means like gramya katha. You're always just village talk, a little this kind of talk, that kind of talk. Nothing important. So he wanted to avoid these things. And part of the reason was is that he was getting special mercy from the Lord. He could remember his past life, and this motivated him very much. He was a deer in his past life. He could remember this. Previously, I was a king. I went to do austerities. Then I became a deer because I showed affection to a deer. Jayadvaita Maharaj once wrote an article for Back to Godhead about reincarnation, and the main topic of the article was a young girl in Bengal or someplace, Orissa, Bangladesh, East India. She could remember her previous life. And when she was just starting to talk, she was telling her parents, you know, about persons that she remembered from the previous life, and about her clothes that she wore, her name that she had, the place she lived. And the father and mother, they became curious, and they thought, let's go to this place. We know this place. We know the name of the village that she's talking about. Let's go there and see. So they took her, and actually they went through the village, and she led them. She knew the way to the house that she wanted to visit. She could remember from previous life. And she entered the house. She knew where things were in the house. She went to a trunk. Some of her old clothes were there. Some of the people she lived with previously. There was an immediate transfer from one life into another life in a village nearby, and she was able to reconnect. This is all reported by a scientist in the United States. But gradually the memories faded away as she grew up. And she wasn't especially concerned about using her life for devotional service like Jada Bharat. She was more into the relatives and friends aspect of remembering her previous life. And Jada Bharat was, of course, fearful of this previous life. Jada Bharat understood these points, I think, that Srila Prabhupada is discussing in the purport, how it's explained in Bhagavad Gita that because of our association with material nature, we take a particular body, we meet with good and evil in different species of life, because of this association with the modes of nature, under the influence of superior order, the superior order, daivanatrena, providence, under the will of providence, we are connected with other living entities. Krishna's marginal energy, living entities like our parents and grandparents, they're nothing but Krishna's marginal energy, and he arranges for us to associate with certain living entities as our parents and grandparents according to our desires and what we deserve. Srila Prabhupada said he was born into the family that he was born into by the will of the Lord. You know, he got the opportunity to be born in a family of transcendentalists, as did his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, born in the family of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that kind of birth is especially rare, Krishna says. Or you might be born in if you do some yoga, some kind of yoga, even bhakti yoga, if it's incomplete, you'll maybe be born in a prosperous family or a brahminical family. And then you get the opportunity to take up where you left off, to continue doing what you were doing in devotional service, so that you can bring your life to perfection. And Jada Bharat was really serious about this. Srila Prabhupada also, he explained this to us, he taught this to us, how to be fully engaged. He said that the mind is never vacant. Sometimes in meditation we might try to make the mind vacant, you know, if we don't know too much about meditation. I remember when I began thinking of meditation, when I was not even 20 years old, you know, just a teenager, I thought, well, you sit down and you close your eyes, and then you take account of what's going through your mind, and you try to more or less stop your thoughts and maybe just try to reach a vacant situation in the mind. That's what I thought. But Krishna says, no, the mind is always thinking of something. So the best thing, Krishna says, is to always think of me, man manabhava mad bhakto, Manmana means with your mind, think of me. Now, why does Krishna say that? I mean, we're engaged. We're engaged in his devotional service. We're here wearing saris and dhotis. We're putting on tilak. Physically, we're here in the temple. But sometimes our mind is elsewhere because the mind is not inactive. Sometimes it's active outside the temple. As we know, we're on the internet, you know, sometimes, and we're checking the news, we're checking this, what's going on. You know, that's okay. Sometimes Krishna is leading us, you know, to an understanding of what's going on so that we can properly preach and so on. But the point is that Krishna wants our minds to think of him. So that's nice. If you know, you fall in love and the person you love wants you to think of the, you know, oh, the beloved, I have a beloved. So Krishna is also very, you could say, passionate about the souls. Krishna loves the souls, the conditioned souls, and he wants them to think of him. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, you're to Arjuna, and you're very dear to me. Istosi me. You're very dear. Krishna has a yearning to love the souls, like Arjuna, his devotees. Krishna wants to experience the love of his devotees. You're very dear to me. So Krishna is actually seeking humanity. He wants people to use their lives to think of him, to offer obeisances to him, to be devoted to him. And Prabhupada quotes this verse. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madyaji mam namaskaru. Namaskaru means offer obeisances. Namas, nama, nama means na, not, ma, me, or the ego, the egotistical person, the person who thinks I'm this body, the ego, and not this ego. Namaskaru, offer obeisances to me. So that means offer nothing less than everything you can offer, your entire self, the mind, the body, your speech, your wealth, your words. We offered our limbs when we're offering our obeisances. Our limbs are touching the floor. Our head is lowered. And we're offering Krishna our arms, our legs, everything. I heard once that the ladies don't offer full obeisances because the womb is considered sacred. But the idea is, anyway, we're not acting independently of Krishna's will. Even Mary had, the Virgin Mary, she had Jesus in the womb. And she said, when the angel came to her, she said, the angel said, you know, this is God's will. He wants Jesus to be born. And she said, yes, thy will be done. So that's the idea also for devotees of Krishna, not acting independently of God's will. So our obeisances signify that. And Srila Prabhupada, when he spoke on this idea, he said, you know, even a low-born person can come to the temple and offer obeisances. Nobody is restricted. So there's really no difficulty. Maybe at some point in India there was some restriction. I think Gandhi had to make a campaign that the untouchables could enter the temple. But generally, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, even someone of low birth, he can become my devotee. So Prabhupada was saying the process is very simple. You just offer obeisances, put your head on the floor, lower your head. And as long as you don't divert your attention, you're in good shape. As long as you do not fall down in any circumstance, you're doing good. Like Jad Bharat, he was very determined not to be deviated by, you know, from the two lotus feet of the Lord. He wanted just to chant the Lord's glories and not be caught in the bondage of fruit of action. Most people are not very cautious about that. So he wanted to avoid their association. Because he knew then he could revive his devotion for Krishna. Then the soul could become devoted to the Lord again. It's a natural process. It's a natural force. Chetodarpanam marajanam bhava mahadabhagni nirvapanam. You know, just like the moon rises, it becomes full. There's just some natural law working by which Purnima takes place once a month. We see the bright full moon. So there's also this natural process of chanting which cleanses the mind, and then the natural devotion of the soul for God manifests. So Prabhupada was discussing this, and we'll just look at a few things he said. Krishna says that if we do this process, then we'll come to him. We'll love him. Prabhupada was saying that Krishna is the supreme Atma, and we love Atma, every one of us. If there's some danger, we immediately try to protect ourselves. Suppose there's some fire here, you know, then someone will run for the fire extinguisher, others will run out of the building. We want to protect the body from danger. Why? Because the Atma is there inside. We actually love the Atma. We want to protect the Atma. Just like you protect your country, right? If your country is invaded, the army rises to protect it. If your house is broken into, you protect your property. You make sure there's insurance. But when the living entity is no longer within the body, who cares for the body? It's just disposed of. It's burnt or thrown away or buried. So the body is not what's important. Ultimately, it's the self that's important. And the self is important because it's part and parcel of the Supreme Self. That's why we love the self. Because ultimately, we love the Supreme Self. So Krishna says, if you follow this process, you'll find out the supreme lovable object, and that's Krishna. And he's inviting the living entity, Mame Vaishyasi, come on, let's live loving one another. Krishna's just inviting us, come on, let's live loving one another. So every one of us, we love Krishna, but we're missing him now. We're misdirected. We're putting our love here and there. Then Prabhupada tested his disciples. So what's the difficulty? Can anyone say what's the difficulty? He wanted to hear some objections to this, what the disciples thought was difficult about this. So one devotee quoted a verse from the Bhagavad Gita that said, if you're too attached to material enjoyment and material opulence, then devotional service won't take place. So that's one difficulty. Yes, Prabhupada said, we want material happiness, therefore there is difficulty in loving Krishna. Or there's difficulty in the sense that we become unsatisfied, frustrated. We don't get material happiness in the way we expect. We advance so much, he said, in Europe and America, so advanced in material happiness, but actually the people are not happy. Material happiness cannot give us lasting real happiness. But if we come to Krishna and love him, then we will get it. Now we're becoming frustrated. So if we can conclude this, that we will love Krishna if we follow this process, then what's the difficulty in executing the process? If it's the highest perfection of life, and we do it, what's the difficulty? So again, he asked the question: what is the difficulty? And Bhagavan said, well, there's no difficulty, only if one is envious of Krishna. And Prabhupada replied, huh? Then there's no question of love. That is another thing, if you're envious. But if you actually want to love Krishna, where's the difficulty? And some devotees said, there is no difficulty. And Prabhupada laughed, and he said, yes, that's my point. If you don't want to love somebody, then there's no question of taking a process. But if you know, by loving such and such person, you'll be happy, then there's a process, and the process is very easy and open to everyone. So, this is my point. Now discuss more on this point. What is the difficulty? One devotee said, sometimes devotees, they want to love Krishna, but they fall down. They can't seem to be steady. Prabhupada said, no, they want to love Krishna, but they divert their love to other things. That is the difficulty. If you want to love Krishna, then follow the process. If you love Krishna, then why are you diverting your attention? You're worshipping the deity, and you're thinking of loving some woman. You're offering artik, and you're thinking of a girl named Radharani, not Radha Krishna, but some girl who's Radharani, named that. So why are you diverting your mind? And just engage in Krishna's service. Decorate him nicely. If you're diverting your attention, it means that you're not yet convinced that by loving Krishna you'll become perfect. That is the difficulty. So it's a question of having enough knowledge and being convinced. So we should take Prabhupada's example and see how convinced he was and stay in touch very much with Prabhupada, follow him, not let the mind be diverted. Even if it means sometimes, to the social, to the public eye, I'll be like dead wood. I'll appear like a madman, you know. They may think I'm mad. I don't engage in regular social exchange, so that's okay. They may think I'm mad, but if I can remember Krishna, that's fine. Any comments, questions? Yes, Rasmund. What's appropriate fear and inappropriate fear in religion? Some religions are based on fear that, you know, you'll go to hell, God will punish you, and you'd better watch out. In the teachings of Krishna, we're told that we've made a mistake. You know, we've gotten entangled in material nature. We've associated with the modes of material nature. And so we have to adopt a process to correct for this mistake. And the idea is that if we follow the process, we'll love Krishna. It'll be a nice, loving exchange. So we don't have to think in terms of fear that God will punish us. Anyway, it's the material nature who does the punishment. It's Krishna's arrangement. The material energy punishes us if we do something that's off, not Krishna himself. So we have to know about the laws of nature to be good. And you know, if a person's good, like he's living in Belgium and he's following the laws, he doesn't have to be afraid that the police are going to give him a hard time. But the criminal is worried, you know. I'm selling drugs and I've got them here in this bag, and if, you know, that policeman comes over here and asks me to look inside the bag, you know, I'm finished. So he's committing a crime. He has to be afraid. So someone who is actually not doing the will of God, he should be afraid. Why should he, you know, be a criminal? That's a healthy fear, and that can help him to rectify himself. If he knows, you know, that criminals are punished. This is in Bhagavatam, in the sixth canto, Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva are discussing it. Three types of intelligence are described. First class intelligence, a man learns by hearing, or a woman. Second class, you learn by seeing the mistakes of others. So if you see that the criminals are caught, then you know, I better look out. Recently there was a French politician who, although he was retired, the court ruled against him. He had committed some crime in office. And the man practically, you know, he's retired. He's very close to the end of his life. But still the court found him guilty because they wanted to show that politicians, they wanted to send a message to the politicians, you're not going to get away with this cheating in office. So they made the retired president an example. So second-class intelligent man, he'll understand, okay, I'm not going to cheat. And then a third-class person, he has to learn by his own mistakes. And, you know, he'll get punished, and then he'll understand, I got to stop like that. Another question. Yes, sir. Is there knowledge? Is there value in having knowledge of the past life? Well, generally speaking, yes. We should understand that we've been transmigrating in many species of life. That knowledge Krishna gives us. And Prabhupada repeated it again and again and again. So we should know, why did that happen? Now, some specific birth, it doesn't seem to be required. I've heard that in the very beginning of life, when a child is just 1 or 2 years old or 3 years old, at that time the memories are most likely to be still remaining in the mind. There may be some remembrance at that very early stage. If you want to find out about a person's past life, best thing is to ask your child when the child is really young, because at that time he still, or she might still remember. Later, after a few more years of social interaction, forget. But because Krishna arranges for us to forget this, you know, Krishna's giving knowledge, remembrance, forgetfulness. So, if it were important, Krishna would give more of this kind of mercy that he gave to Judd Bharat. This was special mercy he gave his devotees so that he could overcome this hurdle of having fallen down once to the life of a deer and not falling down again. If you want to regress, you can. There's a few devotees who know a little bit about regression. And they'll take you into a kind of regression, hypnotic regression. And maybe you can remember something. Maybe you'll learn something about yourself. Sometimes it's practical. There was one, on the recommendation of Ravindra Sarup, I read a short book about regression. And, you know, sometimes it helps people. There was one lady who was so afraid of water that at one point she couldn't even stand to wash her hands because this water just freaked her out and she couldn't understand what was going on. They took her to somebody who did regressions and it turned out that she drowned in her previous life. So she was so afraid of water. So then that helps. Okay, now I know. Now I know why I have this fear. Okay. Thank you very much. I think I'll stop there. Thank you, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.